This is the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra. You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra. You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra. You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra.
Let us pray.
You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra.
Here is the news, read by Maazi Chidubem Akobondo. First, the main points of today's news broadcast. General Alani Akinade regrets fighting against Biafra and fears for Nigeria's disintegration. Andy Oba and Obasanjo's hope to destabilize Anambra people dashed again. Igbo journalists threaten hunger strike over bad roads in the region. Governors from Igbo zone raise alarm over erosion. And now the news in full. Former Nigerian Chief of Defense Staff, Lieutenant General Alani Akinade, retired, who is also a former Chief of Army Staff and one of the pillars of the Yoruba political elite, last week regretted his participation in the Nigeria-Biafra war. He stressed that he would not have fought in the war against Biafra to keep Nigeria together if he had known that the country would find itself in its present state. Retired General Akinade was speaking at a forum tagged, quote, "The New Nigeria Dialogue," end quote, in Lagos. He further warned that Nigeria risks disintegration unless true federalism was restored. Fellow Biafrans, isn't it pathetic to say the least that it was precisely because of people like Alani Akinade who fronted for and crystallized the animosity of the Yoruba race against Ndibo that fueled the prosecution and prolonging of the genocidal war by Nigeria against Biafra? It was people like Akinade of the Yoruba tribe who deliberately refused to share the vision and foresight of His Excellency Jerachukwu Emeka Odumegwu Ojukwu that Nigeria as one country was no longer workable, precisely because they were salivating at the prospect of appropriating the opportunities left by fleeing Biafrans. Now that Biafra's foresight has been proven correct, they are regretting their participation in the genocidal war against an innocent people and fearful of their place in history in helping to create the monster that is called Nigeria. Shame on all of them, including Obasanjo and all the rest. The Court of Appeal sitting in Enugu has rejected the unholy attempt by Andrew Oba to become governor in waiting over Anambra people through the back door and thus reintroduce instability into the polity. Oba had requested the appeal court to declare him, quote, governor in waiting, whatever that means, who should take over next year after Peter Obi's term in office. But in a unanimous decision in which all five justices threw out Oba's application, the court ruled that after due consideration and looking at the argument by the applicant and respondents, the court had no choice and to dismiss the application in its entirety as it lacked merit, had no moral basis, and would be a judicial blunder of immense proportion to grant the release being sought. The court, in its ruling, also stated that the election of Obah in 2007, as allowed by INEC, was not conducted in accordance with the supreme law of the land. If Obah's prayer was granted, it would bury the rights of Anambra people, for it was not supported by point of law. The election of Obah was therefore illegal. The VOBI would like to acknowledge the prominent role played by Dean Chukwuemeka Odumegwu Ojukwu in helping the court see reason and arrive at the crucial decision. But for his proactive, even belligerent proclamation on this issue, who knows what the outcome of the appeal court ruling would have been. Perhaps, now at last, Andrew Oba and his master, Olichego Obawafo Obasanjo, will finally lay to rest their unholy plans to destabilize Anambra people. Journalists in the Igbo zone comprising Abia, Anambra, Ebonyi, Enugu, Imo area have threatened to embark on hunger strike to protest the bad condition of so-called federal roads in the zone. They regretted that the bad roads had claimed many lives and property worth billions of naira, and therefore determined to embark on hunger strike if the Abuja government fails to commence repair work on what they described as the completely dilapidated roads in the Igbo section of Nigeria. In a communique from their meeting held in Umuahia, they called on the Nigerian Assembly to put pressure on the government to commence massive reconstruction work on the roads without delay. It remains to be seen if the hunger strike by Igbo journalists will influence the Nigerian government to change their stance of denying Ndibo their rightful development projects. After all, a similar hunger strike embarked upon not long ago by legislators from Imo over the same problem failed to move the Abuja government. Such is their one Nigeria, Ndibo. Governors from the so-called southeast zone of Nigeria recently raised an alarm and urged the Nigerian ruler Umaru Yar'Adua to declare an emergency on erosion on roads in the zone, warning that greater areas of the geopolitical zone would soon be cut off from other parts of the country, unless something urgent was done. To further highlight how the zone has been cheated on such issues, Governor Peter Obi of Anambra State, in a separate submission, revealed how the Abuja government awarded 16, we repeat that, 16 non-existing contracts for erosion control in the state. In other words, the 16 contracts were only on paper, but no execution of projects on the ground. Peter B. therefore concluded that the people had waited long enough for government intervention to no avail. It was again the familiar tale of woes in Enugu, venue of the 2009 Senate retreat, as the governors from the zone took turns to narrate the incalculable harm done to their communities by erosion. Fellow Biafrans, Ndibo are tired. We are tired playing to the gallery by their governments who take no concrete steps to alleviate the suffering of their people when the opportunity presents itself. So, where were the governors and the so-called representatives from the Igbo zone when the North selectively passed a bill to check desert encroachment in their own part of the country, without a counterpoint bill for erosion? Enough of this scapegoating. Here ends the news broadcast for today. Good night, and God bless Biafra.
You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra. You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International Broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra. This is the news analysis segment of the Voice of Biafra International VOBI broadcasts. You have heard the news, now the analysis. Fellow Biafrans, We have a few questions for you. Question number one, what are your plans for today? Question number two, what are your plans for tomorrow? Question three, what do you intend to do next year? Ask these questions with regard to your own self and honestly. Then ask the same questions again with regard to your family, your children, your spouses, your parents, your grandparents, kinsmen and kinswomen, and your friends. And if you are not overwhelmed yet, then extend the self-same questions to your community. In all likelihood, you have been driven to the point and place where you no longer ask this type of questions of yourself. You just wake up, if at all, then follow the day as it moves you along. Not as you move along in the day, but the day moves you along. Then at night, the darkness takes you in its frightful grip, only to deliver you, fully battered, unto the coming day, which will be no better than the previous day, and which holds the same soul-sucking emptiness. For your information, the rest of the world does not live that way. Now, just in case you should want to console yourself thus, no. The world cannot even imagine that anywhere on this planet people will live like you do. Please believe us, we know what we are talking about. And for that matter, as bad as things are all over Nigeria in general, no group has it as terrible as you do. Tell us this, do you think that Abuja has an idea what you are really going through? Or is it Kano, Kaduna, or Jos, Sokoto, Lagos, Ibadan, even Benin City and Lokoja? Do you think they know how bad you're suffering? No, because in those places, people still make plans to live as normal human beings, which means taking care of today's affairs, tomorrow, and the future for themselves, for their families and friends, and for their communities. People there have some hope, but there is nothing in your way of living today, at this time, which speaks of hope, never mind having such hope. It isn't there. It is not there. We know that. We know some of you are now tempted to answer, quote unquote, oh, everything is okay. But we know that it is not okay. You also know that. So let us remind you, just in case. Last night, you went to bed as soon as it got dark for at least two reasons. First being that there is no electricity to support after dark living and fun activities like we used to know it before the 1960s. And second, you are afraid of armed robbers who often send you a message as to when to expect them. And we all know they will keep the appointment and you dare not be absent when they arrive to rob you. At this time, though, kidnappers are feared more than armed robbers, and you know that. Your room was double locked from the inside. Your windows have stronger and tighter iron bars than those in jailhouses. And heaven forbid that a fire should break out inside, perhaps started by a lit candle, assuming you can afford one. Then you will certainly roast therein, because no one can get in from the outside to help you, and you won't even be able to unlock the door from the inside when the heat is on. You wake up in the morning and there is not much water for a quick wash. Food is scarce and a change of clothing is an unthinkable luxury. If you have a job, you are not being paid. A labor strike would be a welcome rationalization. But for the most part, your earned salary is being withheld from you for no reason at all. Staying home, going to work, and being on the streets is all the same. No meaningful activity, no gainful employment, no enrollment in self-improvement education. Danger stalks you all day long, from criminals, from rogues, from politicians, from kidnappers, from accidents waiting to happen, from starvation, from malnutrition, from disease, from the Nigerian police, the Nigerian military, and from the Hausa cattle rearers who are overtaking your cities now. It's getting dark again, so you hurry home. If you stayed home for the day, you just change gears and prepare to retire for the night. Then the cycle repeats itself, day after numbing day, night after darkest night. You stop thinking about school for yourself and for your children, right? Of course, because there is no educational system left in place. Foreign institutions are out of question because there is no way to afford that. What about job opportunities? You stop thinking about job opportunities because Nigeria's punitive policies against our people have led to the denial of labor infrastructure, such as reliable power source, reliable water source, reliable trade system, and reliable transportation to move goods and personnel around, thereby making it impossible for industries and factories to exist in order to hire and pay workers such as you and supply demand to those who want it. You pray and fast so frequently for no reward at all that it would seem to an observer that your God is deaf or enjoys seeing you starving and suffering. Otherwise, it is you that are blind and deaf because you are not willing to see and to hear the answers provided by God. Next, you try to join politics, the quote, do or die politics, typical of Nigeria, which for you ends up being do and die, or even don't and still die. Your lot in life, if you have one, is even poorer than your luck. We are sure you have already notified your relatives, especially those abroad, not to visit because it is no longer safe for them to come back or to visit their own homeland. You yourself can't travel freely in our homeland for fear of armed robbers, police extortion and murderers. You can't travel outside our own enclave for fear of terrorism and jihad targeted against our people. You can't even relax for fear that kidnappers can strike anytime and anywhere, where your loved ones can be the victim, either the kidnapped or the one who will not be able to come up with the ransom, thus practically guaranteeing the death of your loved one. So please, don't tell us the obvious lie that, quote, everything is okay, unquote. We know, and you know, that it is not. Why don't we have electricity? Why don't we have water? Why don't we have industries? Why don't we have functioning schools? Why don't we have jobs? We have manpower. We have human resources. We have brain power, enviable, world-renowned, and world-proven talents that Nigeria wants to kill us for. Yes, we have brain power. We have material resources, and we have natural resources enough to rank among the wealthiest in the world. We can live in proper security. Why don't we have hope? Ask yourself, why? Then listen to the answer. In Biafra, as Biafra, we will have all these things which are really already ours and more. Then gone will be these awful endless days and woeful times of depravity that force us to live many rungs below the level of even wild and rabid animals. And Biafra is just waiting for us to actualize. Getting our Biafra does not depend on Nigeria. No, it does not depend on the world either. We are a nation, a race, that is natural, that is our nature. We are entitled to self-determination rights. Such rights are God-given, though even the United Nations now agrees. But until we assert our right, this right to self-determination, long may we suffer and grovel and pine away needlessly. So it really depends on us. Affirm to yourself today that you will join us in the struggle to assert Biafra's right to sovereignty and independence. Biafra's rights of sovereignty and independence. Thus, to lift you and all out of the hellhole called One Nigeria, which has been sucking us down into this bottomless pit. Vote for hope. Accept and adopt self-determination leading to Biafra actualization. Vote for Biafra. Lift yourself and us all out of the doldrums. Be Biafran. Achieve and accomplish those magnificent and lofty things that we have proven capable of. Biafra is really the answer. Yes, Biafra. Biafra alive, because it is God who makes it so. That's the news analysis for the week. Thank you. God bless and keep Biafra and you until our next broadcast. Voice of Biafra International, VOBI, broadcast now continues in Igbo, one of the Biafran languages. Ndi Biafra, ekeleo, anye kelunu. Nka wakuko nkanyi na bo news analysis, osi na Voice of Biafra International, VOBI radio, dina Washington, D.C., na ala America, na Biarunu, na Balea. Biko juonu unu unu unu, udia jujudio tua. Kedi hem ge meta. Gini ka m ga-eme echi na-abịa abịa, olee ihe m ga-eme na mgbe na-abịa n'ihu? Mgbe I jiri eziokwu jụọ onwe gị ajụjụ dị otu a, gaa hụ na o nweghịzi ihe iji aka na gị wụ mmadụ Chineke kere, ma ọwụladị anụmanụ akarala gị mma. Maka anyị enweghị nchekwube ka ndị mmadụ ahụ zuru oke. Ọrụ adịghị nke anyị ga-aga. Ndị si na ha na-agụ ọrụ, o nweghị ụgwọ ọrụ a na-akwụ ha. O nweghị onye na-aga skuul. N'abalị, anyị na-arahụ ụra n'ụjọ ndị oji egbe ezi ochi. Mgbe chi bọrọ, ụjọ ndị kidnappers ejide anyị, jisi anyị ike. Mmiri ọṅụṅụ adịghị, nke eji asa ahụ ma ọwụ akwa adịghị, ka ọfụkwanụ nke eji esi nri, ebe nri adịghị, ọkụ eletrik adịghị. Ụzọ adịghị, ụzọ esi akpata ego adịghị. Unu atụrụla onwe unu asị, ịsị na ihe na-aga nke ọma, mba. Unu echekwala na o nwere ndị ọzọ n'ụwa ya na-ebi ndụ ọkụ mmụọ dịka unu si ebi, mba. Marakwanụ na ọwụ n'ezi na ihe siri ike na Nigeria, ma ọwụ unu anyị ka ọ kasịrị ike, ka ọ kasịrị njọ. Eleghị otu ndị Chineke jiri akọ na uche, amamihe, ike ọrụ, ụba na ala ọma gọzie. Eleghị otu ndị dị otu a bịaziri ugbu a dịka ndị akagburu akagbu. Jụọ n'onwe unu ajụjụ ya, ka unu nwetakwanụ ọsịsa wụ eziokwu. Ka unu nweta ọsịsa na Biafra ga-edozi ihe ndị a niile, mezi ihe ndị a niile, mee ka anyị bie ndụ ka ụmụ Chineke. Ka anyị dị ka mmadụ Chineke kere, ka mmadụ Chineke jiri aka ya kee, na-awụghị anụ ọhịa. Biafra ga-enye anyị nchekwube, nye anyị ìhè, ebe Nigeria buterela anyị naanị ọchịchịrị. Nnweta Biafra nọ anyị n'aka, ọ n'aka anyị ka ọ nọ. Ụwa anọchirila anyị ụzọ na nnweta Biafra, mba. Ma ọwụladị Nigeria anọchirila anyị ụzọ na nnweta Biafra, mba. Ọwụ anyị wụ ndị gaasị, taa, anyị ga-enwetara Biafra. Dịrịzi otu ahụ nweta Biafra, maka anyị na-asị, onye kwe chi ya ekwe. Kwee unu na Biafra, soro anyị nweta Biafra taa, ka ihe ọma wụrụzie nke anyị, otu Chineke anyị siri kwuo ya. Ọ dị oke mkpa. Biafra, birikwa, ka Chineke siri kee gị. Biafra, ndụ gị, Biafra, ndụ gị, Biafra, ndụ gị na ndụ anyị kwa, maka Chineke nọnyerela gị, nọnyekwara anyị. Ndewonu. Voice of Biafra International, VOBI, continues. Thank you.
You are tuned to the Voice of Biafra International broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing you matters of interest to Biafra.
Here is the commentary, read by Olu Igbo Chigewe. Today's commentary is titled, Are They Waking Up at Last, or What? When we read in Vanguard newspaper of November 14, 2009, a statement credited to the President General of Ohanaeze Ndị Igbo, Chief Raffaele Echue, quote, Igbo marginalization can break up Nigeria, end quote. We couldn't help but experience a fleeting moment of satisfaction and even relief. At last, an Igbo leader is stepping up to the plate. At long last, an Igbo leader is showing some spine and maybe even balls. Maybe an Igbo leader will stand up and speak truth to corrupt power. Maybe Igbo leaders will rise from their moral deathbeds. Maybe, just maybe. The statement by Chief Uwechue is really not such an earth-shattering revelation or even such a big deal, especially as everyone knows that Nigeria is already dead and just waiting to be buried, and especially as Chief Uwechue is still talking about building the nation called Nigeria, whatever that means. However, the mere fact that Chief Uwechue pointed at just a tiny fraction of the horrific bad faith which the Sokoto Caliphate, the Hausa Fulani Yoruba oligarchy, have displayed toward the Igbo in the half a century existence of so-called independent Nigeria is worthy of note. That such a tiny and non-threatening statement evoked even the slightest notice by anyone tells us a lot about the depth of despair the Igbo have suffered in Nigeria. Can you imagine what would have happened if the cardinals and bishops in all our churches, world-acclaimed international writers and intellectuals, top military brass, serving and retired, international civil servants, world-renowned inventors and scientists, top journalists, actors and musicians from Igboland in particular, and the Eastern region in general, all have, with one voice, been speaking up forcefully in various international forums against the persecution and the enslavement of the Igbo and other people of Eastern region. Can you just imagine how the world would have rallied to our defense and support? When you talk about the evil that the Sokoto Caliphate and the Hausa Fulani Yoruba oligarchy, hiding under the umbrella of satanic One Nigeria, have perpetrated on the Igbo and their brothers, it is clear that Chief Uwechue did not even scratch the surface of that evil. We will just scratch the surface for you. The fight for Nigerian independence was carried almost entirely by the Igbo and other people of Eastern region and a handful of Lagosians like Herbert Macaulay. The NCNC, the only truly national political party that carried the fight for independence, was led for 1 year by Herbert Macaulay, who died the same year in 1945. Thereafter, Nnamdi Azikiwe was elected the leader of the NCNC, and with other people of Eastern Region, including Professor Eyoita, Alban Ikoku, Nwaforizu, Emai Opara, Dennis Osadebe, Akano Ibiam, Anthony Enahoro, and others, forced the British to grant self-government to the three regions of Nigeria, East, West, and North, and eventually independence to the country. While the East and West accepted self-government but insisted on full independence, the North insisted on remaining a colony of the British government. The North delayed independence for everyone for another 3 years, as Azikiwe and the NCNC begged the North to accept freedom for their people. Shameless people. By the time the Northern feudalists accepted to be part of independent Nigeria, they insisted on having half of the seats in the Federal House of Representatives. Azikiwe and the NCNC acquiesced. Then, they insisted on producing the executive prime minister and gave Nnamdi Azikiwe, the holder of bachelor's degree from Lincoln University in the United States and the master's degree from University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school in the United States, they gave him the ceremonial office of governor general without any powers. Azikiwe acquiesced. Thus, throughout the whole of West, East, Central, and Southern Africa, the only person who led his people to independence and freedom, but was denied the opportunity to head the government at independence, was Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, who, even until his death, was continually denied that opportunity to put his ideas into concrete reality. Rather, Alhaji Malam Abubakar Tafawa Balewa, a grade 2 teacher, and one of those who opposed independence, was handpicked by Alhaji Ahmadu Bello, the Sadona of Sokoto, and sent to Lagos to become the Prime Minister of Nigeria. Now, judge for yourself what damage he and his Sokoto Caliphate rulers did to Nigeria. Before independence in 1946, the British colonial government had completed plans to establish apartheid system in just northern Nigeria, just as they had in South Africa. They had segregated certain parts of Jos for whites only and started building schools for whites only. It was Nnamdi Azikiwe who organized huge protest movements and forced the British to abandon the establishment of apartheid system in northern Nigeria. How did the North pay Azikiwe back? In all the efforts to organize a meaningful census in Nigeria, the North has always inflated its population to dizzying figures, thereby specializing in what will euphemistically be called, quote, fuzzy math. The West soon joined the North in doing the same thing. That practice has continued till today and has resulted in census figures that indicate that Kano alone has more people and therefore more local governments than all of Igbo land. As laughable as this is to any sane man or woman, it is still the official census figure of Nigeria today. The Igbo acquiesced. In 1964, the Premier of Eastern Region, Dr. Emai Opara, argued that revenue allocation should be on the basis of derivation. That is, that the people from whose land the revenue is generated should be allowed and allocated the revenue from their land. the government of Western Nigeria joined the government of Northern Nigeria in opposing this policy, and they returned to the way revenue had always been allocated when groundnut and tin were king in the north and cocoa was king in the west. The west and the north then insisted on landmass and fake population as criteria for revenue allocation. The east was defeated. Baby killer Yakubu Gowon, working for the Sokoto Caliphate and the Hausa Fulani Yoruba oligarchy, cut off oil-bearing Igbo communities in southern Igboland and merged them with other ethnic groups. Then, the evil government of Nigeria commenced pressuring them to deny their Igbo identity. It bribed their leaders, cajoled, and even threatened them. Subcommunities had acquiesced, denied their Igbo identity, and started bastardizing their names and the names of their communities. Baby killer Yakubu Gowon even confessed that the reason why he created states in 1967 was to subvert the identity of the Igbo and undermine the unity of the people of Eastern region. Now, we ask you, did he succeed? In 1965, the Sokoto Caliphate and the Nigerian federal government of Malam Abubakar Tafawa Balewa subverted the Yoruba and made them engage in an internecine war in which they slaughtered themselves in large numbers and burnt down whole communities in what they called Operation Weti. The Caliphate had also imprisoned Chief Awolowo, the leader of the Yoruba, and thrown Yoruba land into anarchy. The Igbo were horrified. Then, the Premier of Eastern Region, Dr. Emma Yotbara, sent help to rescue the West from the Caliphate. Mazi Okonu, an Igbo man, was broadcasting the authentic results of the Western Region election from under the table in Awolowo's house, as the Hausa Fulani and their ally, S.L. Akintola, were announcing fake results, slaughtering Yoruba men and women, and destroying Yoruba land. This eventually led to the coup of January 15, 1966, whose goal was to release Awolowo from prison and install him Prime Minister of Nigeria. The Yoruba joined the Hausa Fulani in dubbing it an Igbo coup, though Major Adewale Ademoiga, a full-blooded Yoruba officer, confessed that he was one of the five majors who planned and executed the coup, and that their goal was to release Awolowo from Calabar prison and install him as the Prime Minister of Nigeria. Ojukwu released Awolowo from Calabar prison. On getting home, Awolowo declared his support for the Abri Agreement, one of whose clauses was that northern soldiers occupying Western region must return to their homeland in northern Nigeria. Awolowo then issued this famous statement, quote, "If the Eastern region is allowed by acts of omission or commission to secede from or opt out of Nigeria, then the Western region and Lagos must also stay out of the Federation," end quote. Northern Nigerian soldiers refused to leave Western Nigeria. Awolowo, who was saved by the Igbo, formed alliance with the Hausa Fulani, who had been killing his people and occupying their land, and in one of the most dastardly acts in history, urged his Yoruba people to join the Hausa Fulani in slaughtering thousands of Igbo and other people of Eastern region living in Western Nigeria. In 1983, the Sokoto Caliphate and the Hausa Fulani Yoruba oligarchy organized a coup to topple the government of Shehu Shagari. Umaru Diko, Minister of Transport in Shagari's government, later revealed that the only reason they planned and executed the coup was to make sure that Alex Ekwueme, then Vice President of Nigeria, will not become the president of Nigeria after the termination of Shehu Shagari's second term as president. Buhari and the Sokoto Caliphate dumped Ekwueme in Kirikiri Prison, Lagos, and sent Shehu Shagari to his home in Shagari village, Sokoto. When Ibrahim Babangida the snake annulled the election of Abiola as president of Nigeria, Ndị Igbo were in the forefront of fighting for the restoration of Abiola's mandate. When Abiola thought that he had finally concluded his secret treaty with the Caliphate and the Hausa Fulani, he immediately told Ndị Igbo that he did not need the Igbo to be president of Nigeria. The Igbo licked their wounds and shut their mouths. When the Hausa Fulani and other Northerners fell on the Igbo and slaughtered 100,000 Igbo and other Easterners living in northern Nigeria between May and October 1966, what did the Yoruba do? They sent Yoruba Obas to tour northern Nigeria and thank the northern emirs for not killing the Yoruba when they were slaughtering the Igbo and their kin from the eastern region. There are literally scores of examples of bad faith, treachery, and cowardly exploitation of the Igbo and other Easterners by the Hausa Fulani and Yoruba. Anyone with common sense, not high sense, should know never, 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 ever to trust the Hausa Fulani and the Yoruba in discussions, in negotiations, in treaties. Never ever trust their public declaration and pledges of loyalty. Once the chips are down, they will sell you down the river. The Igbo and their kin in Eastern region must realize that the only agenda of the Hausa Fulani Yoruba is to dominate you, exploit and use your resources for their benefit, and enslave all you people of Eastern Region Biafra. The only survival strategy for the Igbo and their kin in Eastern Region is to fight back aggressively, to push back as fiercely as ever against this evil plan. Unless you push back ever so aggressively, then you all will be enslaved. A bully responds to nothing other than aggressive counterattack. You have been complaining about resource control. We ask you just one question. If this oil and gas were to be located in Sokoto, Katsina, Kano, or Maiduguri, all of you from Eastern Region will be begging for the issuance of visa from Arewa country to travel to Kano, to Jos, to Maiduguri, to Katsina, to Bauchi, and even to Makurdi. Ndị Igbo, onye mara asụ ya sụọ n'odo, onye amaghị asụ ya sụọ n'ala. May God bless the smart people of Biafra and the sovereign independent state of Biafra.
For international broadcast, coming to you from Washington, D.C., bringing to you matters of interest to Biafra. Thank you for listening to our broadcast. God bless Biafra and you until our next broadcast. Good night.